If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hi.
Hi there. Well, we sort of gently stepped into that one instead of our raucous hellos.
Yeah. It's the morning, so, you know.
I know.
Normally we do this in the evening, but it's still before noon, so I'm not quite my chipper self.
I totally understand that. I mean, though I have to say, we will have to explain, we may hear various lawnmower-ish things in the background, because where I live, they sometimes do cleanup at this time of the morning.
Right.
So we will have that normally when we're here. They're not doing it because it's nighttime or late in the afternoon and everyone's gone home and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So how was your week?
It was good. Last night, so I do this goddess gathering, goddess of the month workshop that I've been doing. This is our fifth year.
Ooh.
And I take a break over the holidays because of busyness and scheduling and all of those things. So November and December, we didn't have a gathering. And then in October, I had a guest priestess lead. We did a Caradwyn night. So I had someone who's dedicated to Caradwyn come in and lead the ritual. So last night was my first night leading my workshop, basically, since September.
Wow.
And we worked with Baba Yaga, which is one of my beloveds. She's an entity I work with on a daily basis. So, it was fun to start the year off with her, and it was great. It was wonderfully. I had a lot of older, experienced women come last night, so there was really a lot of strong crone energy that I just freaking adore, and so it was really good. I just feel super fed by the experience.
Oh,
I usually do, but, you know, it was the first one in the new year, and I always get a little nervous before a class, and, you know.
I performance jitters.
Yeah, I was telling someone last night, I always expect no one's going to show up, so when people show up, I always get excited. Oh, look at people actually came. So it just was really lovely, and it was lovely to share the story of a beloved, you know? It's always nice to share the gods that you are so intimate with.
And true.
So, yeah, that's really, like, I'm super fed off of that today.
Excellent.
Yeah, and today we're doing the show early because I have a witch camp conference call this evening, so I had to hope Elvira would be willing to be flexible for me today, so I'm, you know, gearing up for a very busy day of planning witch camp stuff, which is also stuff I love to do. But just the last couple of days have been quite lovely.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, how
that's
are you
good.
Doing?
Well, you know, it's I realized I've only been back from Arkansas for 3 weeks, and it seems like months, mm-hmm. because when I got back, it was just like I, you know, they say you hit the ground running, and it's been that way straight through. And I had a chance to go to my step-granddaughter's children's party. Obviously, I am one of the parent-grandparent people, so I could have gotten out on the Cal State roller rink, but I truly decided that my coordination is a little less than I used to be, and I'm not ready to try that. I thought, you know, the more I look at those, they had those little plastic tubing. They're like a V shape, and they have little rollers on it, so that it's basically so kids can hold onto it and get out on the roller rink.
Nice.
And they have something similar in the skating rink, but I was looking at that going, I'm going to be one of those that use that, even though it's little and I'd be hunched. I don't care to get my balance on those little roller.
Get it.
I will be doing
it.
because I guess someone said, well, why don't you do this? I said, listen, I went out, I bought roller skates. I don't get rollerblades. And I said, I was going to go do the Caesar Milan, walk my dogs with the rollerblades. And, of course, these are, when I did that, they were a year old puppies and, you know, pretty hyper. And I'm going, okay. And so I got on my skates. I got the dogs on their leashes. I got outside. They barked and ran around and damn near tripped me because they didn't like my rollerblades or roller skates. So I put them inside and I decided, well, I will start to shuffle on down the road. And it was pretty pathetic. And I looked at that and I went, you know.
I would enjoy seeing that, I have to admit.
Yeah, you would. It was like, I actually stayed. I didn't fall. But we have asphalt. And you know, asphalt that's been resurfaced and not, you know.
It's a little bumpy.
A little bumpy. I mean, I thought, this is going to take a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm able to do it, and in reality, nada.
So I would just want people to get a visual of this, right? So Elvira is... She's a short woman.
Yes,
right.
Short, 5'2".
She's got dark purple, dark purple hair, right? But she's a living, walking, breathing gypsy. She dresses and looks like a gypsy. So imagine that on roller skates, and it's amazing. I love it.
Yes. Well, that would have been I would have been dragged not gently down the road, and so obviously I returned the skates and decided that was not going to be the case. So. This was actually a lot of fun watching everybody, and I had have an idea. What I may do now is go in the morning on some days when I'm not, you know, with clients or otherwise, and start to do that.
Nice.
And just do something, because I was looking at that going, other than the idea that it's a great exercise, there was a moment of I'm not old,
mm-hmm.
and that feeling is what I want to capture in there before I get up to the next level, which is my other grandchild going into roller skating.
Right.
I want to be able to do that. So either way,
nice.
I will be doing that.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was my challenge and my decision, but I got to visit with my stepson and his kids. And so it was really a family night day, mm-hmm. but the rest of the week has been work.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm at this place, so.
Yeah.
And it's not work, because it's about conversation about things that we know, but we learn. And this one is the coven versus solitaire.
Right.
And I think this is not as much a book learning process as it is an experiential.
Right. And we've phrased it, you know, coven versus solitaire, or solitary versus coven. And it's not really... These things aren't in opposition to each other.
Right.
There, you can be both. You can be neither, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to have... One is not better than the other. They're just different.
They're just different.
And being clear about why and how they're different, and giving each one a chance for a minute.
Right.
Because even when you're in a coven, really, you're still solitary, because there's still things you're going to do on your own.
Right. Or experience on your own and maybe not share within the coven experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
I do want to say something first before we jump in.
Okay.
I wanted to just give a thank you to the folks who are listening. This week, I've had a few people reach out and say, oh, my God, this thing you said was so funny, or hey, I built an altar after listening to the water show, and I've just had some people reaching out, mm-hmm. and it's really beautiful and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, on the fire show, we talked about salamanders and why, like how I didn't get why salamanders were connected to the element of fire.
Right.
And someone sent me a photo of a book they're reading about magic and mythology,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And how they believed salamanders were born of fire because of their bright red and yellow coloring.
Oh, okay.
Right?
There.
So, you know, not only are people listening and enjoying and laughing along with us, but we're learning shit.
And, hey, is that not what dialogue is about? I mean, again, we're going to – I love this show because I get to – it's not that I have political leanings, I go out and I do this, but it's like dialogue within the dynamic of what we're talking about, which is our belief systems, our spirituality, but dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's where instead of somebody getting angry or, you know, proselytizing their own way and no other way, it's like you learn something. Somebody said to you this and you didn't go, well, I mean, obviously, I'm the authority.
No. It
so,
doesn't work that way.
Not at all.
No.
And I think that's another reason why the concept of being, oh, you know, in the pagan tradition, in the witchcraft, it's about consistently learning.
Oh, yeah.
And growing. And you're not rigid. I mean, it's not that we don't have systems that are rigid,
mm-hmm.
but pretty much everybody finds out that the rigidity can only go so far.
Right. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Listening.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Here we go.
Elvira had a brilliant idea. So we should start this coven solitary discussion by talking about our experiences
mm-hmm.
with coven and solitary. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Oh, heck. Let you start. I've been babbling about dialogue, so.
Okay. Let's see. So I have to think back. So first starting out, I was 15, and very shy. I may not come across as an introvert. People are often surprised when I say I'm an introvert, but I am very introverted and I'm very shy. And I often describe myself as socially awkward. And at 15, it was even worse.
Mm-hmm.
I've come a long way. But there was no way I would have been brave enough to go and seek out a coven at that age. No way. And looking back, I think that's probably for the best. I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did at that age was I roped in a couple of my friends, and we would do the rituals out of the books we could get our hands on. And
right.
So we weren't really solitaries, and we weren't really a coven.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a lot on my own, reading books and using books as my foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got a little older, I started going to public rituals. So again, that's not a coven.
No.
But it is working with other people.
Right.
And a lot of what I learned at public ritual influenced my solitary practice. You know,
mm-hmm.
I learned how to raise energy at public ritual. I learned different ways to call the elements and create sacred space at public rituals. So
mm-hmm.
that was very beneficial, but that just fed my solitary practice.
Right.
And then in my early 20s, I got married to someone I had met at a public ritual.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer together, but we are, you know, we get along just fine. But we had lots of coven stuff together. We would have full moon gatherings at our house, and it wasn't the same folks every month.
There
was kind of an open door policy, but we definitely had coven work, and there were a handful of us that got, you know, pretty close. And I'm going to use the word intimate a lot in this conversation, and I don't mean sexually. I
mm-hmm.
mean intimate,
mm-hmm.
emotionally, and vulnerable with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for several years. And then, you know, things fell apart, and my marriage fell apart, and, you know, life moves on. And I kind of reverted back to the solitary position. And then I became part of learning groves and learning circles. And again, not coven, but not exactly solitary either.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner, Gleon, and I have been in a few different covens together throughout our time together, different forms and shapes and traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we both have our independent solitary practice, and we have a practice as a couple, which kind of happens when
mm-hmm.
you're
exactly.
in a partnership with a like-minded spiritual individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you end up doing ritual together. So again, that weird fuzzy not coven, a coven.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've been in mostly eclectic covens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also part of a gardenarian coven currently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit more traditional, right? There are rules and regulations and things that must be followed and all of that. And I'm still learning that. I'm new to the gardenarian tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So most of my experience, both as a solitary and as a covener, is very eclectic. And my attempt has always been to not be the high priestess, to not be the one in charge.
Yeah.
But more often than not, I kind of end up being in that position because if no one else wants to do it, I'll do it.
Right, right. Sort of like by virtue of everyone stepping back, you've stepped forward.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I like it when covens work as a unit and a team, and
mm-hmm.
and you rotate leadership. That
right.
feels
yeah, that's
beautiful
much.
To me.
Yeah, that's a very
yeah.
That allows everyone to take their leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
into effect and
it's practice.
Practice.
Yeah. All right. So there's my long and meandering tale.
Oh, well.
About you.
How about me? Well, I actually started later in life doing things that would be more group orientated. I found myself studying tarot after a marriage that broke up, and then after that, that sort of led me into a more hermetic tradition, and I didn't do gardenering, I didn't do the Golden Dawn, but I studied, I read, I, you know, meditated, I called in directions, and, you know, just as we do, we learn from books.
Yep.
And when I moved up here and I started my metaphysical store in Healdsburg, I started to come out, so to speak, to actually do things.
Come out of the broom.
Come out of the broom closet. And a hereditary witch, started coming to the store and holding moon circles.
Nice.
And then from there, I kind of got really excited because I liked how she was talking. So I started going to her Sabbath circles out in Villa Grande, which, you know, is kind of towards the ocean and, you know, out in the wilderness kind of area, little thingy. And she started doing teaching, so of course I followed that. Now, a very dear friend of mine now was someone who started coming into my store and doing, you know, the moon circles and following the different things. And so we kind of grouped together, and we would go as a team out to the circles and then the teachings. And so it wasn't a coven. It was open to people that came and went. And the teaching was a little more structured and a little more, you make the commitment, you're there. But she required us to learn how to call in the directions and do circle. And so that was a training coven is
right.
what I would say, more than, a, you know, anything else. And from that was the next one. I mean, she was more rigid in her structure. And then I got another group of women that I started to connect with, and it became another teaching circle, and I kind of moved from one to the other, and so did my friend. We kind of went together, and from there, that was exciting, and then I sort of split off
yeah.
and did a 9-month program with Sedona Cahill when she was doing teaching, and so there was a group of women that I got together there, and we called in circle and we did things. So it was, I have done a lot of teaching circles
yeah.
and a lot of work with that. Out of my store, I met another woman, and between the woman that I had been going to these circles with and this other woman, we formed a coven.
Nice.
And she originally lived in Healdsburg, and from there she and her husband and family moved to Grants Pass, Oregon.
Oh.
So her daughter and my daughter were the same age and became bonded as sisters. And so there was a reason to continue over and above the spiritual reason. And so we would literally, on the Sabbath, we would pack my car up, put my daughter in, it was a little car, pack my daughter in the back section, kind of in a little nest. And after work, my friend and I would drive up there for the weekend
wow.
of that Sabbath.
And it's like a 7-hour drive,
yes,
right, to Grants Pass.
To yep. Grants Pass.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be, I remember the night rise, and we'd get up there and we kind of get in and blurry it. And then we would, you know, we would wait, and then Saturday night would be when we would do our circle work.
Nice.
And then Sunday, and then Sunday night we would leave. And especially Samhain.
Right.
Because, of course, the kids would go trick-or-treating. We'd take them trick-or-treating, and then we'd get them off and, you know, go with the older siblings, and then we'd go do our witchy work.
Nice.
And we were together for, well, probably a good 10 years or more plus. And then, you know, through divorces and massive problems, and that was my coven, and that was my coven sisters. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it kind of separated a little bit because there were things that happened, and we would still get together. We started doing it over the phone because some of it
right.
couldn't be done. So we would
a lot of it's happening online now. People run covens.
Online.
Yeah.
And due to life changes, it finally did break up.
Yeah.
Now, one of my circle sisters is still in the area, so we still do work.
Yeah.
But then we both decided we'd get together with another group. And so I personally am with the coven. She's just, you know, goes and visited, you know, they're very open about the circle work, except certain work you can't do, but you can be a part of the circle.
There's open ritual and
open
ritual.
Open ritual, right.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, I think the way my world has been, I've stayed more solitaire. I haven't been able to make it to a lot of their gatherings because they happen to gather on a day I work.
Right.
So
right. Modern life.
But, and I also found that they're younger than I am.
Yeah.
And so I am the elder.
Yeah.
And there is a certain sense of responsibility that keeps,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, keeps getting thrown.
Yeah.
And they want a leader, and I don't want to be the leader.
Sure.
I want everyone to participate
yeah.
and do their thing, like you were talking.
Of course.
And I'm like, they keep stepping back and waiting for me to take it, and I'm sitting there waiting, and I mean, we're waiting and waiting. It obviously,
game of chicken.
And so Spirit stepped in, and it's the day I work
yeah.
at Milk and Honey. On those Saturdays, and Spirit stepped in and said, here, take this job, go over here and do this readings, go here. And so it pulled me out without, you know, having to be rather rude.
Yeah. Well, I want to point out language you used, because you said we were together for a decade and then we broke up, right?
Yes.
And these are words that we use to refer to our romantic relationships.
Oh, yes.
And again, a coven, there may be a romantic component if that's your shtick, but most often that's not the deal.
No.
But you become very close and bonded and intimate with
mm-hmm.
the people you are in a coven with, and it is being together. And
yep.
when it dissolves, which they do,
mm-hmm.
just like anything else, most groups have a
lifetime.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it is like breaking up, and sometimes it can be tumultuous and ugly,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it can be sweet and satisfactory, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes there is a coven I know of, a very good friend of mine that's been in a coven for like 40 years, I want to say. It might even be longer than
wow.
that.
Wow.
And when they first started, they were radical, and they went to protests, and they did all this political magic, and they were hardcore, and now they get together once a month and watch a movie together. And that's their coven gathering.
Yeah.
You know, but they,
yeah.
know, they love each other, and they're close, and they're intimate, and they want to see each other regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And the magical part of their relationship is done.
Right.
And they're doing other things now, but they're still together,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it doesn't always look like
yeah, where they get together and they do all kinds of, you know, interesting
yeah.
things. And that's another part of it. I think for me, there's times when you need to take a hiatus.
Yeah.
Whether it's from a coven, or it's from even your solitary practice as a structured practice.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
just like you took a hiatus from teaching for those 2 months because of the time of the year, it means when you come back, like now, you're refreshed and there's almost a new invigoration.
Right.
And I think that's another part of what we can start talking about in terms of how covens work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what the tradition, because again, each tradition has a different way
yes.
of initiating and putting together a coven.
Right. Right.
So, and then solitaires are, again, you've learned, you've read, you've done whatever work, and you take it, and either you follow it traditionally in whatever tradition you have studied and choose to continue, or you become like Phoenix and I, eclectic,
mm-hmm.
and we follow different paths, but then we see the ones that feel comfortable, and you might even change according to the time of the year what you do.
Right. And, we said this earlier, we're not advocating that one is better than the other.
Correct.
But there is pros and cons to both sides of the fence,
mm-hmm.
or either side of the fence, I guess. So being aware, if you've, especially because of the Internet makes it very easy to be a solitary and yet still be connected to community.
True.
And there are, we are lucky, Elvira and I, we live in a very open-minded, liberal part of the world that when you tell someone you're a witch, they don't even bat an eyelash at you. It's
mm-hmm.
no big deal. But there are still parts of the United States where if you told someone you were pagan, you could have some very difficult things that you have to face.
Mm-hmm.
So finding community, finding coven, finding even classes in some of these parts of the United States is very difficult. So I don't
right.
want to make it seem like, well, if you're just a solitary and you're not working with other people, you're not getting enough. Because that's not true. You can get quite a bit.
Right.
But what I want to say from my experience, what is very clear for me, is I spent many, many years learning from books
mm-hmm.
and practicing what I had read, and a decade at least of that type
mm-hmm.
of experience. And then when I did finally shift gears and reach out to community and start taking workshops and classes and get involved in covens, my learning scale grew exponentially.
Right.
It was putting all of those things I had read that I had integrated,
mm-hmm.
putting them into practice.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much more rewarding and fulfilling and fast.
Yes.
It was also confirmation, like all of these
mm-hmm.
things that I've been doing on my own
mm-hmm.
that I learned in a book, oh, I'm doing it, quote-unquote, right.
Exactly.
So it's hard, and I don't want to sound like I don't get that there is a plight of people out who have to deal with discrimination and things like that. But if you can find people to work with, even if that's just a reading group or a study group or a learning group,
mm-hmm.
I do recommend it because it adds to your solitary practice, even if you're great with being a solitary.
Right, and I can attest to that because I go visit my daughter in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, Arkansas is the South, even
right.
though Missouri technically becomes the Midwest. And I personally was looking around when I go there on my, couple of times a year jaunts to see what's available and test the waters. And, of course, I do not change my dress. So everyone knows I walk in and I am, obviously not from around there, so to speak. And, of course, with the purple hair, it makes it even more so. And yet, quite frankly, there are people there that are doing it. So it's
yeah.
very much...
We are everywhere.
We are everywhere. And young people are doing it just as statements of who they are. So it's not as dramatic as you would think. But I test. And the places I found are the places, mostly in the area I was looking in. Yes, you do. You go in and you kind of test the waters and you do that. And you do find like-minded people. And then you connect and it is the underground in many ways.
Right.
Which is, kind of an interesting philosophy because I've been raised in, California, whether it was southern or northern, and you are who you are and you flaunt it, you are it,
right.
you act it, you become it, and then you go to other places that aren't that way, and it's very interesting because it sets up all the old fears.
Sure.
We're talking old fears of times when it really wasn't okay and it was pretty scary, and we talk about those the different classes, the different discussions of tools and things and when it wasn't okay to have a broom or this and use it for that or this. It still has a grouping.
Yeah, and the current political climate is making that even scarier.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah,
So it's go out and learn. You check it out. You find it. And I will tell you, when it's time, it'll be there. It doesn't matter. I've learned that even in my own practice, when I'm ready to do something, it will come. I may start looking for it. I may push a little bit, but it will suddenly just sort of fall in my lap.
It's true.
And that provides you with the confirmation.
Yeah, yeah. And paganism is on the rise. Alternative spirituality is on the rise. And there are events and conferences happening all over the United States, new ones cropping up. There's a new one in Atlanta this year.
Wow.
I think it's this year. It's new. It might be 1 or 2 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Mystic South Festival.
Wow.
So, you know, there's Convocation in Detroit, Pantheacon in San Jose, California. There's the Witches Ball, which I can't remember where it is. I think Chicago. But there are witch camps. There are events like this happening all over the United States. So even if there isn't a little witchy shop in your backyard or your small town, or if you're not near a big city, do some research. Let the internet be, you know, your guide, and at least try to make it to a conference or a big event or a pagan pride day.
Mm-hmm.
There are pagan pride days everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can at least see that you're not alone.
Right.
It'll tell you what, for me, I go to Pantheacon every year. It's in San Jose in February. And over 2,000 people, between 2,000 and 3,000 people come to this conference. And for me to look around and see all of these folks who practice different flavors of paganism or witchcraft or whatever, but we're all together. There are so many of us. It's very rewarding to just look at your tribe.
Right.
You know? So if that can be a possibility, even if you can't get a monthly coven or, you know, a regular meeting group, at least once a year, go and find your people.
Right.
You know?
Touch in.
It feels good.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And, you know, that's, again, that I can see that as being, even on the coasts. The coasts have a little bit more fluidity of their openness to things, or the variety.
Right.
The middle of the United States does have a tendency to have a little bit more distance between that. So, but as Phoenix said, the internet is a great place. People do hold covens on the internet. I mean, in terms of that, as always, I am heartened by that and also concerned because, you know, as we have gotten more worldwide, we have learned to touch each other's lives, but then we also have the cautions that we need to be aware of. And I know there was a couple of people that had been clients at one time of mine, different times, where they were in covens, but they were in covens on the internet and teaching on the internet, and some things that weren't so nice happened. So I have to also put that out.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, why when Phoenix said go and be with people, if it's one gathering a year, it means you connect in with those that are out there so you feel the realness of what's there, so you can go back and use discrimination as to what's happening on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah,
so.
And it's tricky, you know. I don't want any of this to come across as flippant, or, you know, Elvira and I are very lucky, and so I don't want my privilege to seem obnoxious.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But it is. I can look at my span of experience and see the key points of when I had real growth, or more obvious change or more depth of understanding. And those were often moments where I was connected into a larger community. And some of the most wonderful and life-changing experiences I've had with my beloved deities and my guides and my ancestors has been in the work I've done on my own. You know, when you're working as a solitary, you have the opportunity to shape your rituals to look like whatever you want them to look like. You can build a spell work, you can build a process and a practice and a wheel that you use every day that fits you.
Right.
It can be completely you. It doesn't have to fit for anyone else. It doesn't have to be flexible. You don't have to worry if everyone else can make it on Tuesday night. You just have to be there on Tuesday night, you know? So there is a lot of power in the autonomy of being a solitary.
Right.
And you can really shape your practice for yourself.
Exactly. And I know that I've gone between, and I've realized that as much as I love groups, I guess I'm getting crankier in my old age. I do not suffer fools as much, and I don't mean that in a harsh way. It means if you're willing to work and you're willing to get through your stuff and you're willing to do that, but if you just want to sit and wallow in all of the emotional stuff, I won't participate.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not going to be good for you. I mean, I know I wallowed in my own emotional stuff with, you know, different groups that I, you know, went through, but most of them were teaching, so it was like some teacher was kicking my ass to get going.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, we all have our own timeline. We all have our own, you know, flow, and I think that coven work is important.
Yeah.
Because it gives you the concept of how to work this group of energies that we call witchcraft in a group.
Yeah.
And again, dialogue, co-partner, whatever we're going to do with it, and then go out and do your own, because in truth, we are both integrated and solitary.
Right.
And I think that when we get back from our break, we'll probably do a little bit more of the discussion of, you know, a coven and some of the ideas there. But I know this has sort of become a more free-form discussion, and that's what we had anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of our experiences, our thoughts, but also what happened for us.
Right. After the break.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxy with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Whoa ho, and we're back!
Yay!
Enthusiasm. Okay, so, coven work.
Yeah.
Probably the first thing is to decide if, you know, when you go into a coven or you put together a coven, it is usually there is a focus of it. So as you're from reclaiming or the Gardnerian, or people want to do the Hermetic Golden Dawn, these are all things that you would need to determine or find out or, you know, kind of work out. It's like a planning committee.
Right.
You know, you get the people that are interested, and then you discuss the process.
Right, right. A really effective way to start a group, if you're thinking of maybe that's the route you want to go,
mm-hmm.
is to pick a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, 12 Wild Swans. It's a Starhawk book.
Oh, yes.
But it is chock full of projects and ritual and trance work to do as a learning group. And
uh-huh.
There's lots of books you could do this with. That was just the first one that popped into my head. But pick a book, and then every week you get together and you do the next thing from the book.
Right.
You know, it can give you a framework to at least get started
uh-huh.
if you have no experience doing anything like this,
uh-huh.
you know.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say, too, there's a saying that the best thing about community is all the people. And the worst thing about community is all the people.
Yep.
So, if we were to put a little graph out of the amount of drama you experience as a solitary compared to in a coven, the little line would go higher and higher and higher as you get to a coven, because you're dealing with people, and the more people,
mm-hmm.
the more potential for drama.
Mm-hmm.
So that is often the argument I hear from folks who say, oh, I'm a solitary because I don't want to deal with all the BS.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
but there are also plenty of ways to avoid BS,
right.
deal with it,
mm-hmm.
or make sure you're with the right group of people so that never becomes an issue. Are there drama queens in the pagan community? Yeah. Are there people who are always looking for something to be dramatic about? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to align yourself with those folks.
Right.
And unless you like that.
Unless that's something that you, at that time, need to process through.
Yeah.
That's the other part of, I know that when I use the word process, I keep hearing Miss Cat going, what that word is. Because for the first year that I worked there, I heard a lot of people use it, and she got really kind of,
yeah.
and it is an overused
yes.
word and an overused concept.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you get together in groups for what you think is a spiritual reason and have that to be the case, but you're also working through other things that are very important, and it can be drama, it can be victimhood, it can be all grief, it can be all kinds of things
yes.
that you're working through, and that group and those people are the resonance of what you do, and sometimes the length of time that you spend there is what you're processing, working through, and helping others too, and then either the coven grows
yep.
or the coven dissolves, or you pull out of the coven and the coven continues to go on with their little thing.
Right.
And I know that that is, you know, that is where we are in one of the groups I'm in. So for me,
yeah.
but it's probably also because, you know, there's a different level of growth and learning that has happened. But covens are important. And yes, you start with groups and you have drama because we're human.
Right. And if you're part of a specific tradition, then your coven work is going to look a specific way.
Exactly.
If you become initiated into Gardnerian or Alexandrian or any of these traditions where initiation is required,
mm-hmm.
then as a dedicant, as a newbie, you're going to show up and the high priest and high priestess are going to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have your ritual, and you may or may not hang out. There may be other coveny things you do together, but it's kind of it. It's the ritual, and
that's
then you're
it.
Done.
Yeah.
Where with more eclectic covens, where there isn't these rote procedures that
mm-hmm.
you're doing every time, you got to come up with things to do. You know, you're creating the rituals together,
mm-hmm.
or if there is a high priest or a high priestess or something, someone who's leading the group, they're coming up with these rituals, but you know, there's lots of different, coven doesn't look one way. There's
yeah.
lots of different ways to do it. There's lots of different flavors. But no matter what, communication is important. Just like a romantic relationship, you have to be able to say what you need. You have to be able to speak up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When something isn't feeling okay, when something isn't right, when you're being triggered, when someone else is causing conflict, you have to be willing and able to openly talk about these things.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
a mature adult.
Mm-hmm. Which means growing up.
Right.
And that's part of what coven work is really good for. I mean, it's a family. It becomes a family.
Right.
It becomes the dynamics that somebody may be like your sister or like your
yeah.
aunt or like your mom or like, you know, and if you've got male and female in the coven, and someone could be like your dad or your
sure.
brother or your boss or whatever.
Sense of opportunity to
yes,
be triggered.
To be growing. And I think for all of us that have wandered through the path and continue, it's when we're ready for something new.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of nose out what we need and we find it. So it does have a structure. You do need to sit down. You need to find, you know, ways to plan.
Right.
What you want to do, what kind of coven, what kind of group you are, what you will want, what you don't want.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually a book called Coven Craft. I have it right here
mm-hmm.
on the table, written by Amber Kay. And it's a little outdated because the internet was a baby when this book was written. So it's, you know, go to your local bookstore and look for flyers. And now you just go online or you go
yeah.
to witchbox.com.
Right.
So, you know, besides that, everything else in the book is great.
Mm-hmm.
It literally walks you step by step on it. If you want to start your own coven, here are the things that you want to know. Here are the ways to do it. Here's
potential roles that, you know, you have someone who's your treasurer, and you have meetings, not just rituals, and here are all kinds of team-building exercises
right.
you can do to get to know each other, and it's a great book. It's a great book, and even though I'm not starting a coven and I'm not in that place in my personal practice, I refer to this book a lot because I teach a lot, and I lead workshops a lot, and there's just things in here that help create that atmosphere of community and help give you some sort of skeleton.
Right.
So if you are thinking you want to get involved, it even has information on joining a coven. Like what, if there's already a coven in existence that you're interested in, here are some things you need to be aware of, you know, because they're, you need to know who you're going to meet. You need to make sure none of these people are predators. You need to make sure everything's safe. So it's a really great book.
Because I've been watching Phoenix with the book over here, and we were talking about that. So, and there are things that are viable. So, yes, research, work, put it together. This is, you know, I think in what we want in our lives, you want structure.
Sure.
If you want structure, you need to prepare to put it to foundational building a structure rather than let's all go do a show like, you know, the Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland teen years of we'll go put a show on for saving Uncle Jim's farm.
Right.
And suddenly they have everything together and it's all, you know, stagecraft and you're like, oh, yeah. So not quite. Not quite. You can tell where my background was originally, was in film.
Right.
But it really amazes me that we still think that way.
Yeah. You know? Well, and you, there's this interesting thing that I see in the pagan community over and over again, and that is this well, there's a thing around money, right?
Right.
And there's a thing around authority and leadership. And I feel like we have some major issues in our community around these things. And money, that's a subject we should talk about another time. It's a whole thing.
Yes.
A whole thing. But sometimes we have real complicated stuff
right.
around leadership. The bottom line is, my opinion, but the bottom line is if someone has more experience than you, they may be able to help you.
Mm-hmm.
They may have something to offer you.
Mm-hmm.
They have experience because they've done the thing you're doing before.
Right.
That doesn't mean you're not good. That doesn't mean you don't have new and brilliant ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that what you have isn't of value, but what it means is they may be able to help refine that or make it stronger or make it better.
Right.
And so I think that's, you know, Elvira and I both mentioned this leadership thing where sometimes we've been in groups where people are waiting for us to step in or do something because we have this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the opposite of that happens where people don't want any old school leadership. They
right.
don't want someone coming in and telling them what to do. And so they sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I've seen this happen in the reclaiming community. There are certain communities who got tired of the teachers telling everyone what to do, that they made everything community-based. But sometimes when you do that, the community doesn't have the experience to avoid the pitfalls.
Right.
So you lose something.
Right.
So it's a delicate balance of allowing leadership and allowing community. And that's why I feel like rotation is, for me, that seems like the obvious key. If if we rotate leadership, if we rotate who's in charge, then no one becomes a diva.
Right.
Right? There's no Jesus, Wiccan Jesus, telling us what to do.
Touche.
Yes, that was a joke for Jason Mankey, but I don't know that he'll ever hear it. We often refer to him as Wiccan Jesus.
I see.
Yeah, I love Jason Mankey, so it's not, I'm not trying to be mean. But you also get, everyone gets to practice, right? Like we were saying, you get to practice leading a trance or playing a drum or whatever.
Right.
And that just helps everyone become stronger practitioners.
That's it. And you can see everyone freaking out when it comes time for their turn.
Yeah. It's scary.
It's very scary. And even for those of us who have led and worked in the system of doing rituals and all, it is a performance.
It
every
isn't.
Performance, every time you step out, just like doing our radio show, every time we step out, it is, oh my gosh, oh darn, am I going to do this right? Is it going to be worthwhile? Is anyone going to care?
Right.
There are all those inner little dialogues running around in your head that sort of keep you from making that step, and then of course suddenly you put your foot out there and there you are.
Right.
And people go, wow, that was a really great ritual. That was wonderful. I felt so great about it. And it's like, well, thank you. And, you know, you go forward on that. And I just find that I think for the people I've dealt with and where I've been, it's mostly everybody is so tired from their own life that they have a hard time finding it to do a ritual or to be responsible.
Right.
And that I understand that.
Yeah. Well, and that's another reason that coven can be so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially, you know, as we've been saying, in a shared power coven, it's not always you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this month I'm super busy and I have all this stuff going on and my kid's sick and da-da-da-da-da. Oh, and I have to lead coven. Crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or when you're sharing the power, it's someone else's ritual, and you just get to go and experience
right.
and be in it and
right.
not worry about drumming on the right rhythm or leading the trance or making sure everyone's having the experience. And, you know, leading a ritual is a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
You're not only remembering the outline that you've created and making sure you're saying the things and making the point that you're trying to make,
yes.
but you're also holding the energy of every single person present.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like leading a trance, you have to be kind of tuned in to everyone. Is everyone in this? Is everyone having an experience?
Mm-hmm.
Am I in it? Because
mm-hmm.
you have to kind of be in two worlds when you lead a trance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, leading it and holding energy. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to share that power is, it's good for the group and it's good to be a participant. Like
right.
always the leader.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and numbers. I think that's the other thing that might be, well, what is a coven number? What is the tradition? Well, each tradition may have their definition of it.
Sure.
And I was trying to find this, and I don't know if it's really this or not, but, you know, if two or more are gathered in my name,
mm-hmm.
there I shall be.
Right.
I believe it was Aradia's charge, but I can't be 100% sure because it's been a long time and I've been trying to research it. But it's true.
Right.
You know, it's two as a group.
Yeah.
That's it. And then you can go from there. And three or four or ten, the larger you get, as Phoenix says, the more unwieldy it becomes. But it isn't as unwieldy as a gathering, and you just have a bunch of people, and you're trying to put everybody together as a public ritual.
Right.
You do hold it to a certain manageable size.
Yeah.
And of course, some of them have, you know, reasons, whether it's numerology or, you know, our basic 13 is our witchy number or whatever it is.
13 is pretty traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, I think it's pretty rare to have a coven with that many people in it.
Yeah.
It's a hard number because it's a lot of people. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, even in a coven of seven or eight, getting everyone to be able to show up every time, you know, scheduling alone.
Oh, is amazing. And that is, again, we talk about this in modern day.
Yeah.
In ancient times, they didn't have that. I mean, you were pretty much in your village. You were pretty much in the flow of what was going on.
Right.
And that was pretty much how you could gather together because you weren't going to be going out to, you know, your brother's party or your, you know, other thing over here or
right.
business job calls you to be there late or whatever. I mean, it was pretty obvious it had a certain rhythm of its own. Here we have a lot more.
Yeah.
And it never ceases to amaze me that we can all get put together and then suddenly something happens. And, you know, you just have to let that be okay and hold that person's space, but you have to be aware that you can't have everybody, it can't be so lost in the missing the time that you lose the continuity of your group.
Right.
And I think that's why smaller times, smaller groups are better in this day and age.
Right.
because you have less conflict of duties and life.
Well, and there's just, it's difficult too, you know, with, I think we've said this a few times now, personalities and and conflict. So when you get up to larger numbers, you also end up having people who are in relationship together. You have couples and best friends and people who know each other from work or whatever. You know, I dragged my work colleague along because I thought she would like it. Now we're in coven together, you know. So there's all of that that also needs to be taken into consideration, because in coven you'll be dealing with your own stuff, but for those folks who have relationship outside of that coven, the dynamics of those relationships will infiltrate. And they will impact the coven, and they will impact the rituals. And those are all things that will have to be dealt with and processed and, you know, communicated. So it can be a tricky thing, and it can be a very powerful thing. Because, again, when you do a spell on your own and you raise power, you raise energy to charge that spell, you're using your own, you know, or you're channeling from the earth and from the sky.
Right.
When you're in a coven, and if you have 13 members... You have 13 people's energies that are charging that spell and building that energy and doing the feeding of it. That's
right.
A lot more powerful, just logically. It's a lot more powerful. So, you know, there are pros and cons.
There's always pros and cons. And I think a lot of people that are in covens also are solitaires.
Right.
To balance it out.
Yeah.
That, you know, you do go home and you do your own work for the time that you are on your own, and then you gather in your community of coven.
Right.
So it is a good balance. It also is, this is all time consummation. You have time dedicated to your solitaire practice and time dedicated to your coven practice. And so it's also important to look at your own life and how it schedules in.
Yeah.
What works?
Right. What can you really commit to?
Mm-hmm.
Be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you are looking to start a coven, or if you're looking to join one, then let the internet be your gatekeeper there. You know, Witchvox is a great resource for people who are looking to connect. I'm sure there are other, I think there's like a Pagan Square website, like a chat. It's like Facebook, but for pagans. And there's another one whose name is escaping me. But places like that where you can connect with people, find out, covens will often post on Witchbox when they have open rituals, especially if they're looking to expand their coven or invite in new members. And then finding, if you are in a place where there is a vibrant pagan community, finding public ritual or open coven, or, you know, going to that little witchy bookstore and asking questions about if they know about any gatherings, and taking workshops. One of the covens that I was involved with, much like Elvira described, I met these other people in a class I took, and we ended up meeting every week after that class ended to continue to build our magical practice together.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have to always be. I know that I took one training, and the women actually were from, they were from New Mexico, and I was California, and it kept a connection. We kept a connection for several years, maybe not as a coven, but as a group of people who experienced a training, and of that, more of that energy, and we expanded on that.
Right.
So it's a very dynamic way, I think. It you know, it's just like, I know that with more structured religions, their concept of church or gatherings or, you know, mosques or temples are, you know, you belong to the group, and it's a big thing. And then there's smaller things that are within it, little circles of, you know, different things that the big one has the overseeing, and then the smaller things. We don't have that in the pagan community.
Right.
But here we are. We're ending our day, and we've just finished covens versus solitaires.
Yes. So good luck.
Good luck. Enjoy. We will be back next week.
Next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.